Hello everyone, and welcome to This Nintendo Life, episode 203. My name is NBZ, and by the time you listen to this, I will be joined by Bally, who is married, even though he's not right now. The magic of time travel and editing. Bally, how are you feeling now that your future self will be married? Do you think he'll have figured it out yet? Do you think he'll be settled in with his brain about how it's working?
Figured it out, yeah, that's the question. I don't know. I'm feeling good about it. I think it'll be doing a nice little, a small ceremony.
Yes, about COVID safe, people. You know? Got to take COVID my tests, safe. You know, make sure everything's all good.
Yeah.
Because
I think it will go well. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's made the world a weird place, man. This entire thing that, you know, we would have been like a big thing, and maybe that thing will happen next year, but who knows? Like, it's just everything's been thrown out of whack.
Like, doing an 18 person ceremony in normal times would have been highly controversial.
I think
idea that now it's very like standard, or you know, like only option in many ways, you know, but
yeah, totally, because people would be extreme. Like, well, I got snubbed from the tiny little wedding, but you know, now that's the only way to do the wedding.
Especially as like weddings have pictures and memories, and we'll think about it for a long time to come, and then you'll look back and be like, oh yeah, there was a global pandemic then.
Oh, right.
And they had an 18 person ceremony, but
that historic thing.
We are going to do a big party, a big wedding sort of next year, hopefully, if everything gets a little bit better than it is now. So that'll probably be like 110 people, but one step at a time.
One step at a time. And each little step at a time is this podcast, which goes every 2 weeks, where we take little steps into video games as we progressively complete and finish and talk about more video games, because that's what we do here. So we're going to do that today. Bally, do you want to tell people at home what we're going to be talking about on this show?
Yeah, slightly shorter show this week, just because we're cramming a lot of episodes in recently, and it's going to be a two-segment show. For the first segment, we're going to talk a little bit about the Pokemon Direct mini thing that there was earlier today, and then we're going to talk about the games we've been playing, and then for the second segment, we're going to do a few listener emails.
Yes, some good stuff to get through. Let's start, Bally, with that Pokemon thing. Pokemon Presents, they announced that they were going to do a thing where they were going to talk about...
By the time people are listening to this, it was probably quite a while ago.
Oh, yeah, this is like super old news. Yeah. all the takes we have are going to be stone cold by the time you hear them, and everything. I'm sure you'll have got a bunch of updates and stuff. But, seemingly, that Legends Arceus game is not being delayed, as far as they say. It's still coming out January next year, which is pretty imminent when you think about it. Like, that's a kind of big Nintendo release that is happening in the not too distant future. So they talked about that game. They talked a bit about some other stuff. They did an update to like Pokemon Unite. You know, you can play as Mamoswine now in Pokemon Unite. What a delightful thing. Everyone will love that. I mean, that game is doing gangbusters, so I'm sure it's probably one of the biggest announcements.
Is that going to just completely sweep on mobile? Like, is that going to huge thing?
I think it will absolutely dominate on mobile. It's already like everyone is playing it on Switch already. So financial wise, the Pokemon Unite news probably the biggest news of this. Like, you can play Sylveon now, great, that's fucking money in the bank for the Pokemon company. They're just rolling in it. They did a couple other updates for that stuff, but also looked a little bit at the Diamond and Pearl remakes, which they just seem like pretty straight up remakes, you know? It was giving me a little pang of nostalgia there, like the little tapping mini game in the underground where you like tap away at the gems and stuff and like the
did
rock.
You like the underground? It was like my least favorite aspects of that game.
I don't know. I think at the time I did enjoy going down there and doing that stuff, just because I was trying to recapture the vibes of the secret bases from the GBA games. And I don't think they really hit the same bar as the secret bases, but you could have your own base. So they did kind of like keep it in spirit, even though it wasn't as fun, you know? Like, the fun thing about the secret bases in GBA games was like, it's in a tree, it's like a treehouse base, and you know, you get the little tiles, the ones that spin you around. Like, I remember spending so much time on my secret base and making it look so cool, and it's a similar vibe to like the stuff you got on Game Boy when we did the mystery gift trading. It's like kitting out your room,
like collecting, kitting out, like really cool.
There's just like a customization element to it that the games after it kind of forgot about, I guess, right? Like, I don't think after Diamond and Pearl they did anything along those lines of the series.
Customizable things through other things like ribbons and stickers and all sorts of other things, but it wasn't quite the same as a base.
And they
reminded us that Diamond and Pearl came out 15 years ago, which is like, what?
So that's the Japanese release, of course. The Western release, is about 14 or so.
Only 14 years ago.
07. Yeah, no, I know. I'm barreling closer and closer to Death Valley, aren't we all? We feel it very, very strongly. That's mind-blowing. But that game just looks like Diamond and Pearl, right? Like, aside from those things that kind of reminded me of the nostalgia of playing those games. Because, to be honest with you, I don't have a great memory of the single-player Diamond and Pearl experience, just because majority of my time with that game was just training things and breeding. Same. And, you know, so, like, I know certain spots of, like, oh, that's the spot I would go to
hatch eggs.
To hatch eggs. Like, that exactly, the up and down spot. You know, there's the areas that you would go to do specific things of, like, this is where all this type of Pokemon is, so I can get those specific EVs. So, like, those are the areas that are more burned into my brain versus the actual narrative and the storyline. I seem to remember there being a point where something gets frozen. Maybe I'm thinking of Black and White here. I'm not sure that a city gets frozen and you'd, like, skate across it. That's something that's in my brain. And then there's, like, the big mountain in the middle where you fight Dialga / Palkia. Yeah, there's not a lot that I remember about the game. So if I was to pick it back up, which I might do, I might just get this remake. I haven't fully decided yet. I feel like I should, out of obligation, because it's, like, the most important video game.
The longer that trailer went on, I just kind of, like, got less and less interested in the weird, like, there was something about
I mean, it's, yeah. I mean, it is just a single-player remake of a Pokemon game, right? And, like, I feel at this point in my life, I don't necessarily need to do that anymore, you know? I've done it. I've done it a bunch of times, and that's fine. But, if they offered me the chance to relive my golden days of Pokemon, then I'd take that. But that's something money can't buy, unfortunately. So I'm not able to recapture that magic as much as or as hard as I could try. But, you know, it looks cool. I'm still fine with the style. I know a lot of people don't like it, but I think it totally looks cool. So, but the more interesting game, Bally, Pokemon Legends Arceus, a game that I will buy, I think, and I'm
looking
very curious
good.
About.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Can I just say one really hilarious thing?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so there was this Pokemon in it, and it was like some big fish that evolved from some other fish.
It's Basculin's evolution, yeah.
Which one, sorry?
Basculin. I believe Basculin is from 5th gen, I'm going to say. I don't know.
Okay, but. So they said that this new form of Basculin, or its evolution, is formed by the souls of Basculin going upstream and dying and becoming this Pokemon. I was like, that is so dark and creepy, but I kind of love it. And I just thought that was, like, the weirdest thing, like, because Pokemon can be really dark when it comes to death at times.
You know what, man? Pokemon has a lot of weird, like, strange things you wouldn't expect, like the whole Drifloon, right? The little balloon thing. Like, the description in its Pokedex talks about how it, like, finds children and then they disappear because they take it and they just walk around the corner like the Pied Piper almost, and then they just disappear. The children are gone. And, like, that's in an actual Pokemon game in the Pokedex. They have some dark shit in there for sure. So I don't put it past them that they do stuff like that. But yeah, that seemed like they've had a few evolutions here and there that are weird and different, but it seems like
the regional Pokemon just looks so quirky and strange, and I love that about, like, Sun and Moon, and they did that for Galar, and, like, I'm glad they're doing that again this time. Like, it's just, it's nice because it's something familiar but then with this crazy unusual twist,
right? Like the little Growlithe that they put out there, which, by the way, I had to go to Photoshop because I'm like, that looks like the judge from Phoenix Wright with his beard. So I just Photoshopped Growlithe onto the judge's face. I was hoping for it to pop off and do thousands of retweets and likes, but it hasn't quite yet. So I'm trying to hit the meme lottery, Bally. I'm just always, whenever I see a chance, gotta Photoshop a meme.
It was worth
doing. I spent more time than I should have doing it, but I did do it. And I posted it to Twitter, so you know, go find that on my timeline if you can. So I think probably the wow moment to me was, oh shit, like the exploration in terms of a braviary that can carry you, you can fly over the land, riding a fucking mantler evolution, and also
that mantler looked very cool.
It's called Werdeer or something like
Werdeer,
that. And the Basculin riding the sea. Like, it just seems like there is a Breath of the Wild approach here to the navigational aspect of the game, where it looks like there's not kind of barriers and stuff like that, and you can kind of like be on any surface and kind of get to any place. I wonder if they do implement climbing, if they be that kind of on the nose about it, but certainly seems like they are leaning heavy in that direction, inspiration wise from what they showed. And they did another one of those shots where they like pan out the camera really far behind the trainer who's standing on the ledge, and you see the whole world before them.
I thought it was looking like it ran a bit better than last time.
I don't know if you thought that. Yeah, like I was watching through the presentation at 1.5 times speed after the fact because I was busy today, and so I didn't see when it was live, but I did watch it afterwards, and it's a bit harder to tell frame rate when you're watching it at a higher speed because it messes with it. But from what I saw, it did look, I think, better marginally. Like, I don't think it looks stunning as a video game, but I think it definitely has improved since the last time we saw it, and certainly seems like they're doing some interesting stuff. So I want to talk a little bit about the battle system, actually, because this was a thing that when they talked about it, I was like, oh, they are changing things in a way that isn't like super crazy, but is significant enough for the, like, the idea that the Pokemon battle system ever changes is like blasphemy, I think, to a lot of people and even to Game Freak, right? That they would ever tamper with this thing that has held so true for so many years. But it feels like they're getting a bit more JRPG with it, in the sense that you now have an action kind of sequence, similar to games like Octopath did this, where you can see the turn order. Final Fantasy X did it. You can see like when you will go, and if you have a higher speed stat, there is a chance that you will go two attacks in a row. So you could get two turns in a row versus your opponent that only gets one. And this is then further modified by if you want to do certain types of attacks. So each attack can be modified to be a strong version or an agile version. And depending on which one you choose, you'll either do much more damage but be slower and therefore not have as many turns, or you can increase the number of turns you have and do a bit less damage with an agile version. And it's not the most complicated thing in the world, but it shows that this game is willing to be a bit more of a complicated RPG in the single player sense, right? Because I think, you know, anyone who knows Pokemon knows that the multiplayer of Pokemon is extremely complicated in a way that in some ways is surprising to a lot of people when they figure out what it's all about. But the single player component of Pokemon has always been quite simple and straightforward, and obviously easy for kids to do because kids can play through the campaign without much worry. And this definitely feels like they're adding a few more elements in there while still keeping the relatively simple base of it. So yeah, I don't know how you think about that, Bally, but does that make you more or less interested in this game, the fact that they're shifting things up like that?
Yeah, like I think that this kind of game is a good game to try and mix up that battle system a bit and do something different, because I think there are going to be so many people, myself included, who will pick up this game that wouldn't otherwise pick up a, you know, current gen Pokemon game, you know. So I think someone coming off of games like Octopath, like Final Fantasy VII Remake and stuff, like that really appeals to me, that they are doing something a little bit more close to that kind of formula. And if those battle mechanics stick, this game is obviously far more interesting for me, at least, with the wider world exploration, that kind of thing. But it still needs to have good battle mechanics, otherwise I'm going to get pretty fed up with it quite quickly. So I think it's good that it's looking different and potentially improved.
Yeah, totally. And the other element, right, is it's more action-based, in terms of there are certain Pokemon whose eyes were glowing red in that trailer, and they would just fucking attack you, man. That Ursaring is going to come and bite your head off. And so you had to, like, dodge out the way of it and, like, not get hit.
Go hide in the grass and then come, yeah.
Yeah, like, be sneaky. So that's the other element, is, like, either when you're trying to catch Pokemon, you can be sneaky to not be seen by them, having stealth mechanics. But then also, a Luxray just jumps out and attacks you with lightning from the sky, and you're all of a sudden like, shit, what the fuck, dude? Like, this is kind of what we think about, I think, when we think about Pokemon, if they were existed in the real world, like, they would just be running around causing chaos, right? And, like, that's what they have boiled down here, is you're fighting this actual creature in the wild, and it is untamed, and it is violent, and it is going to come after you. And I'm a little skeptical action-wise how that will hold up. It looks like once you've thrown your Pokeball out, like once you get your Pokemon onto the field, then they will just initiate into a turn-based battle. But the action elements of like dodging and escaping, I wonder if that's a thing where they don't let you throw a Pokemon out for whatever reason, and you just have to either do something specific or throw a Pokeball at it, or yeah, I don't know what other elements they're adding to make that more engaging, because at the moment it looks like you're just kind of dodging out the way of attacks. I don't know what abilities you have to reciprocate against Pokemon that way. So
interesting.
Yeah. So I'm curious to learn more about that, but yeah, it seems like they're leaning into it. They're doing an interesting thing historically, right? Because this exists in a region that is like...
Yeah. What do you make of like the setting and the fact they've gone back in time? Because I've got a theory.
Okay.
So I think they've done the go back in time for this more open world experience because they don't want to render big ass cities and want to do the sort of low key towns like we saw in the trailer, and it's easier to render. But that's the cynic in me speaking. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it goes that far. I think it's probably to some degree it's a way to tie in the Diamond and Pearl remakes with this. Like, I guess, like, I wonder if this began life as a Game Freak Diamond and Pearl remake, and then they decided that they wanted to shift gears, and then they did the more traditional remake with Ilka, who's making that game, and they decided, because they'd already done the models, like the character models for Hoenn, that they would do something different, and that's kind of how this project evolved. I wonder if that's the case, but also, you're right in some senses of, like, having a past means that there's less civilization and therefore more open grasslands. Yeah. If you want to capture that like fantasy feel of exploring an untamed world, then that makes a lot more sense as a setting than a modern day equivalent where, you know, everything is much more regimented and you know, organized and that sort of thing. So, so I think for a big open world Pokemon, the setting makes more sense from that standpoint, narratively as well. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, they do have one big town, which is the same name, Jubilife, as the town in Sinnoh. So for some reason, the name of Sinnoh, the region, it was like Hunai or something. I can't remember what the name is. But it begins with an H, and that is what is currently called before it is called Sinnoh. But the name of the town, Jubilife, still exists for some reason. And that's the thing that supposedly, you know, stayed through history and was existing. But yeah, from what I've seen so far, feels like... Obviously, they're trying to be a bit more action-based, but also more traditional RPG of taking on side quests from people and, like, ticking things off and doing that type of stuff that you would expect. So I'm curious to see how it works out for them. You know, Game Freak, as we've mentioned many times before, small team, don't have experience with big, big video games. This will be the first, like, ambitious project they've taken on. And I think... In the end, it will probably be half a success, half a failure. And I think it's a good way for them to learn for the future. Because if potentially people like this, it's a way in which the mainline Pokemon franchise can evolve and change. And that's exciting because I think it is, as we always talk about, it's the most iterative franchise in their stable or close to it. So,
so really want to see it do well. Like, I'm so excited for... I don't think it will do crazy well, like you say, but like I really hope it does.
I think it will sell well. I just don't know how people will respond to it. Yeah, I think that's the biggest worry. But yeah, I'm excited for the future of Pokemon if that is anything to go by. So yeah, good stuff. Bally, let's talk about some video games that we've been playing. You managed to finish up in the time since last time, Dodgeball Academia.
I did.
Give us your final thoughts on that game.
I am very hot on this game. I thought the ending is suitable for what the game is going for. Like, I don't think it does anything over the top, but there's a big final battle. There's some stuff after. It's all good. I liked it. Very impressed. I did... like some of the side quests. I managed to do the final day of the everyday challenge, which
was nice.
So I might have been a bit of a higher level than you, and I found the final... I did the final few battles like first time each, so...
Oh nice. I definitely found them a bit challenging in terms of having to strategize and heal and stuff between, but it was definitely the last fight was the most I was like focused in and switching people around and making sure
I was already doing the strategy you had mentioned before when we were playing the game before, which was like the swap to the cat and then do this, spit the tornado and then get back to Otto and just like annihilating it.
Yeah, it's a good one. It worked pretty well. So.
It was good. So yeah, I just really want to put out the call again. People need to play this game. If you like Pokemon, if you like sports RPGs, like this is really, really good and is going completely under the radar. And when I beat the game, it was nice. A lot of the people working on the game like liked my tweet and said, well done, thanks for playing our game, sort of thing.
And you got a lot of likes on that tweet. And then also when we tweeted out that we were talking about it on the podcast, I saw a bunch of the developers from the studio had liked it and retweeted it as well.
Yeah, which is really, really nice. I do love Twitter for that when it happens.
Totally. Yeah.
So, yeah. Go play Dodgeball Academia. It's great. It's really fun. It took me I think I was obviously longer than you. I was 11 and a half, 11 hours. So,
okay, yeah.
Definitely worth picking up. Go for it.
Totally. Yes, so I have been playing a little game that is made by a big company. And I think this is one of the surprises that came out earlier this year. It is LEGO Builder's Journey. And what this is it's basically a little narrative adventure game, puzzle game with Lego blocks that doesn't feature any IP. It just features, standard Lego blocks. And the characters don't even have, facial features, but they are very recognizably people in terms of, the certain blocks they use to make them. And it's essentially this very small kind of dioramas, and each screen is like a side-on perspective, isometric, and you see, all the little puzzle pieces, and you can pick them up, the Lego bricks, and you place them in spots, and your character moves by jumping on these certain Lego pieces you have. And so it's all about using your kind of environment to figure out a way to move from one side of the screen to the other. And it's a wordless story, but it is very well told. The game starts off on this kind of Lego beach, and you create a sandcastle, and then the Lego water comes across and washes it away, and all the bricks fall down and kind of physics their way out of the way. And you start off with this kind of father and his son, and they're building a sandcastle together. And then it kind of goes through as he's growing up with him. And then the father goes to work every day, and they showed the monotony of it, with you putting these very gray blocks together that all look the same and very drab, versus the when he's with his son, it's the creativity of Lego. And Lego is a great metaphor, and obviously they did this in the Lego movie a lot, which is you can be the guy who follows the instructions, or you can be the person who's creative and does wild wacky stuff with it. And I think that kind of message is brought through to this game as well, where the monotony of just doing the same thing and just putting the pieces where they're supposed to be, versus the joy and creativity of taking the blocks and making something new and different and expressive out of it, relates to the way in which the father has to go to work and then comes back and his son has been doing all this stuff. And obviously it goes a bit wacky on an adventure. You go down in the basement and off you go, and there's a robot guy who helps you out. And but it is a really delightful experience in terms of, it looks beautiful, absolutely gorgeous. I should mention, played this on PC, but it is on Switch. It's only on PC and Switch at the moment. Switch version, from what I've heard, is also very, very good. The reason I got the PC version is because I have a big boy graphics card which can do ray tracing, and this is one of those few games that really takes advantage of ray tracing, which means that the reflections and the lighting is just off the chain. You can slightly move around these dioramas and seeing the way it kind of glints off the watery bits of Lego, and just the animation is just such high quality when it comes down to it. It just feels really, really nice to interact with the pieces and place them down and figure it out. And I think the game, in terms of its puzzle design, is solid. It's good. It maybe gets a little bogged down in some ideas where it kind of keeps you going on one for a bit too long. They could have cut it short a little bit more. As it stands, the game is only 2 hours, so it is really short. But I think even they could cut a little bit more away from that, because an hour and a half or an hour, I think this would be just as strong of an experience, with a little bit of it kind of watered down to some degree. But I really, really loved it. And I think it's cool because when you do a lot of the puzzles, it feels like there are multiple answers. It doesn't feel like there's a single, you have to put this block here to then get across to this area. Because there are certain rules which it abides by, which is your character can jump across one brick, and then if it's two bricks away, they couldn't jump that distance. Okay. So you have to keep trying to find ways in which to link these certain things together. And then once you're up, trying to build a tower up somewhere, and then I need to take another brick from below there, so you detach it and then put it back up to where you are, putting together and then also taking apart while you're putting together bridges and things like that is really clever. There's other mechanics that come into it later on, and I think just overall it's super effective, just very enjoyable, and a visual delight, an absolute treat from that perspective.
Who did you say developed it?
So I'm actually not sure.
Do the Lego company, they have like lots of internal teams, am I right in thinking? Or do they export their Lego brand and external developers work on all this stuff?
Yeah, so the developer is called Light Brick Studio, which I believe is a internal developer owned by Lego.
Right.
My knowledge from the other Lego games is that they're made by Traveller's Tales, right? Traveller's Tales is like the company who makes all of the movie tie-in Lego games, you know? And I don't believe Lego owns them. I believe they are just a developer that Lego partnered with, but I could be wrong on that. I believe they are their own entity. So this is different, and it feels like, you know, them doing their own thing. Like, they have this own studio that they're using. And it's so weird, right? Because Lego is, like, one of the biggest brands in the world. Like, popular, so much money. And this game on Steam is just, like... Yeah, it feels like an indie. You know, it feels like an independent studio made this heartwarming, charming, tiny, very experimental idea with Lego, but it's an official product from this company. It's just such a strange thing. And I'm really glad it exists, actually, because I think, you know, big companies can make interesting small ideas like this. I don't know, to some degree it's maybe cynical of like it sucks up the energy in the room from like actual independent creators. But I don't know. I like that there is a space for stuff like this to exist that is allowing, you know, if you think about what if Ubisoft made a game that was this scale, right? And they did at some point do that with stuff like Valiant Hearts and Child of Light. Mm-hmm. And that was great, like, because those were new ideas and different takes on a genre and kind of breaking bounds in a way that big games never really can, because
even
they're too big to fail.
Companies like HAL and Boxboy and Part Time UFO, like, it's really good. I wonder if this game started as, like, this was going to be the game ground up, or whether it was just kind of spun out of some sort of tech demo that they were working on something bigger, you know? I don't know. It's really interesting, like, the way that they... Because Lego, when I think back, because I played like Lego Racers growing up and like Lego Island 1 and these games, and I was pretty sure those were like internal with Lego, like they'd set up some studio a bit like Disney used to, you know. And it's,
I wonder.
Like, I don't know. It's because, like you said, it's definitely a different situation now. But yeah, really interesting ideas to like blend Lego with video games.
Right. And I think this would work quite nicely on Switch because you have the touchscreen, right? This was actually originally an Apple Arcade game, so it was on there, and then obviously it came to Switch and PC, and PC works well with the mouse because you kind of move the bricks around with that, but I imagine touchscreen would be a really nice way to do it. The controls can be a bit finicky, like holding down is how you drop or place a piece versus clicking it is to turn it, so you can just do a single click to like turn it around, but holding the mouse click places it somewhere, and there were moments where it's like, oh, it's a little bit finicky and just like not going exactly where I want it to, just because of the perspective and the way that it works. But you know, for the most part, it does the job that it is trying to do. And by the end, there are some kind of really clever brain scratches in terms of the puzzle design.
Nice.
I enjoyed it a great deal and think it's a great game that people should check out. I want to see more stuff like this for sure. And I wonder if Lego will, you know, go more down this route and try another one of these experiments, because, you know, much as we enjoyed those Traveller's Tales games growing up, and, you know, even I, in the history of this show, I've talked about Lego Lord of the Rings that I played way back in, you know, 2014 or whatever, and like I enjoy those games from a franchise perspective because you're usually there for the franchise more so than the Lego. I don't think they really capture the spirit of Lego in the same way that something like this does, right? Those are far more about riffing or parodying whatever thing that they are a skin of, you know. And
I think when they started, they would like speak gobbledygook Lego language, and then they would get voice actors in and do actual
they came to a point where they actually took lines from the actual movies that they were doing into the thing.
It
just felt a bit weird. I preferred it, I think, when it was the weird Lego jibber-jabber, you know? Cause
it was more quirky. It was more...
It felt more tonally fitting with what they were trying to go for.
Because I am very interested in like that Skywalker Saga game, because I think that the trailers for that have looked pretty... cool, and like judging by the amount of time they're spending on it, it's obviously something that's distinctly different from your average Lego game. So
you'd hope so. Yeah. Cool. But yeah, definitely, definitely check this one out. Get it on your wish list on Switch. I'm sure it'll be on sale soon. It was on sale on Steam, that's why I picked it up. But yeah, I'm sure it will.
And it
be
was
awesome.
Out this year, or it was out
yes, came out year? Came out this year around June, so cool. Not that long ago, a couple of months ago. Nice, definitely worth giving a go. Bally.
Well, I have also been playing a short game. It's almost like we're cramming in podcasts ahead of a break.
who could say?
I've been playing the game Florence, which came out in 2020 on Switch, but I think 2019 on mobile or something like that. Just a 45-minute game. Sat down. I said, Caroline, this is a 45-minute game. Do you want to play this together? And I said, you can totally dip out after 15 minutes if you're bored and fed up. And we played it all the way through. And I like it a lot. I don't have overly strong feelings on it. I like it. Yeah. Like, definitely, I'm not going to spoil it, but definitely the story beats, like, Caroline was pretty upset, like, around the middle of the story, and, like, I felt upset as well. I just wasn't, like, as upset as Caroline, perhaps, but then, obviously, the ending is slightly different, and, you know, it's just kind of, it's really cool, this idea that you're playing the life of this girl and going through the motions of, like, beats in life, like meeting someone.
It's just like the life of a relationship, really.
Totally.
And the game is, yeah.
And I think the minigame aspects in there are super rudimentary, like moving the analog stick left and right, just scrolling through things, like tidying up a room, laying out stuff, like very simple things that you can tell they're very mobile gamish and not...
I was going to say, because you play this on the TV, right, with a controller.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of the joy of that game when I played it was the touchscreen experience. You know, it's not often that we go to bat for mobile games, but like in this case, Florence is a game where I think I enjoyed it more as a result of the touch screen.
Yeah,
like it really worked for certain elements. Like there's a point when you're trying to put something together that's just falling apart and it's just drifting away.
Yeah.
And you're trying to put it together. And I think that is so much more effective when you can touch and place than having the remove of a controller. It's almost this kind of connection thing that it does, which, you know, I don't advocate for it that much, but I think in this case, the medium actually matters a bit more from my perspective.
I would agree if it was more involved in what it was doing. Like, I think it's so rudimentary what you're doing more often than not that it's like, yeah, you can do this with an analog stick. And I appreciate maybe it has a slightly more impact with the touchscreen.
I think it's just like because it's so polished, like it feels really nice to interact with. There are certain like... UI things and like sound design things in the game that make it nice to just touch and move things around. So I guess that's kind of where I'm coming from with it, but I totally understand.
No, definitely. And the whole like debate about are video games art? Like if I really wanted to shove a video game that I thought was art in someone's face that they could experience in a short period of time, like this is probably the best one at that, arguably, or close to. Like I think it's
in terms of like a very low barrier to entry that
very
anyone
low barrier
could, like, pick
very
up
easy
and
to understand what's going on, and it's not like WarioWare levels of minigame, you know, like it's
no
very
although it has
simple.
That kind of vibe in a sense of
in
like,
a sense,
the sort of stuff you're doing is that level.
WarioWare is almost like a spoof on this game in some ways, even though it was first. But yeah, I think it was cool. I'm glad it exists. I'm glad I played it. If loads of games came out like this, I wouldn't be overly interested unless they're doing very different things. But it's cool. It's obviously one of Annapurna's more highly rated games, which is good. And yeah, not having strong feelings on a game is a bit taboo on podcasts, let's just say. But
it kind of is, isn't it? It's like I played this thing. It existed, right?
I played
like...
the thing. I enjoyed it. And now it's done. And I don't have a strong feeling. If I talk more in depth, I'm going to give away spoilers. And
That's the hard thing about a game like this is because so much of it is the narrative.
Right. It's a very short little story. And it's just go play it. It's like, I think I picked up on sale for like £3-4. It's often on sale. And it's only 45 minutes. Go give it a go.
Beautiful art. Like I love the capsule image for it. You know, the yellow is so bold and like the character design, just like the cartoon but like with a realistic kind of bent to it aesthetic I really enjoy. And this is one that I also like enjoyed a great deal. I don't think, similar to you, that it's like groundbreaking or anything, but I think it just in terms of what it is trying to do, it just nails it, right? Like, it just does everything that a game like that wants to do, and it just it hits out of the park. And I think it's super, super good.
Do you think the video game industry is often guilty of, but we need more acts, we need more beats, we need more mechanics? And it's like, no, this the direction on this was like minimalist to the max, and it works so well for this game. And in a world where games are getting longer and more complicated and higher budgets, it's just like, we need more short games. We keep advocating that on the show. Like, we need more short games.
Right. And even the short games, like I just talked about with Lego, I'm like, well, it could stand to be a bit... It's 2 hours. Could stand to be a bit shorter.
It needs to be 1 hour. You know, like, and this game is like 45 minutes. And it's like, I don't want it any shorter.
Perfect.
I think if this game was longer, it wouldn't work. You know, like, I think it just...
I agree.
Just gets it right. And that's really cool.
I think it absolutely nails that. Like, it knows it exactly how long it needs to be and how long you're going to be into it for. And then it's just gone. And that's great. And you feel good about it. Yeah. It's a really, really cool thing.
Go check it out. That's Florence.
Florence, available on Switch. Check that out. The last thing I want to talk about, Bally, is a mini quest I am on. You know, I think we've played a bunch of classic Nintendo games at this point, like all the major ones. And so I've started to turn my eye to what are some weird things, you know? Start playing Jelly Boy.
You're digging deeper.
I'm digging deeper. I stopped playing Jelly Boy, and I talked about that, and I'm not going to play all of Jelly Boy. You know, it's just, it's too much, man. Although, you know, you could say that Jelly Boy was the original Super Mario Odyssey. You know, that's where Mario got all his ideas from. But I have always been curious about a game called Terranigma. Now, Terranigma is not the game I'm going to talk about. We're going to get there. Terranigma is a classic action RPG on the Super Nintendo that only ever came out in Europe. And it's weird because a lot of classic JRPGs only ever came out in America, stuff like Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy VI. And so Europeans never really got to play those until Virtual Consoles happened and people did re-releases and all those types of things. But Terranigma is this weird standout where it never came to America, but it came to Europe. And everyone kind of talks about it in hushed tones. It's like one of the rarest Super Nintendo games that is secretly one of the best ones. And it is part of this pseudo trilogy that isn't really a trilogy because the games themselves aren't really connected narratively. However, they're all made by the same company, a company called Quintet. So Quintet was a video game developer back in the day. I don't know if they really still exist to this day or if they're doing anything relevant, but what they did was they one of the most famous games they made was a game called ActRaiser, which I'm sure a lot of people have heard of. And I find ActRaiser such an interesting thing because to me it's one of the earliest examples of blending genres and like trying out weird stuff that could have worked, could have not worked, but in that case I think a lot of people really enjoyed. ActRaiser is this super strange blend of side-scrolling action game mixed with city builder. And so it's like, on one hand, you're this little angel character who like builds a SimCity style or like Civ style, you know, in terms of how complicated and stuff it is, it's all like Super Nintendo era, so it's not like the sort of stuff that you'd expect in one of those games these days, but it had that aspect to it where you're building up this kind of settlement, this village, while also you would go out and you would do these side-scrolling action levels where you'd be this character with a sword and you'd be killing things, and then you would switch between these different modes of gameplay. And, you know, there was lots of experimentation back in those days as companies tried to figure out what video games even were and what genres were. And I feel like we got to a point where we figured out what genres were, then they stayed that way for a while, and now we're almost going back to that era of like, well, there's a bunch of games now that are doing rhythm games plus shooters, you know, like that seems to be a trend at the moment, and genre blending seems to be in vogue a lot in terms of indie developers and that sort of thing. So I think it's just a weird like full circle thing that's gone on. So Quintet have always been a very interesting developer, I think, just from that perspective, that they kind of, I wouldn't say started this trend, but for me it's one of those early examples of how you can take these two totally abstract concepts and blend them together into a thing that people really enjoyed. And then they went on to make this trilogy of games, which include Soul Blazer, Illusion of Gaia, and Terranigma. And I've heard about these games for years and years on podcasts and shows, and people always talk about them as this kind of revered trilogy of games, even though, as I said, they are not narratively connected. The thing that connects them is that they were made by this one company, and they are all action games that kind of have RPG elements to them. So they are like early examples of action RPGs. And so my plan, Bally, because I've been so curious about Terranigma for years, was, well, why don't I just play through the whole Quintet trilogy and kind of go on this journey and figure it out and see what's going on. So the game I've been playing is Soul Blazer. And obviously Soul Blazer, very hard game to find. It's not really available anywhere to buy. So I am emulating it on my computer. I'm playing it through RetroArch, which there was a thing I discovered in RetroArch yesterday, which saved my life. And it's another reason why I think it is so, so cool. I accidentally, you know, sometimes on Wii U, you know, when you're doing the save states and stuff, if you click load instead of save, like, it's the worst feeling in the world. Because, like, what if you loaded a thing and you didn't want to and you didn't save and you lost a bunch of progress? There is an option in RetroArch which is undo load state. So you just undo it and it puts you back to before you loaded the state. And I was like, because I did that and I lost like 20 minutes and I was like, fuck. And then I went into the menu and I see this option and I'm like, holy shit, this is a game changer. And I've also I've bound one of the analog stick clicks to rewind, so I can just hold in the click and it will rewind as well. So it's like the perfect way to play stuff, you know. It's just such a nice experience. Cannot advocate highly enough for RetroArch. What a great piece of software. But I have been playing through Soul Blazer, which is the first of these three games, and it's been really interesting to play through this. It's made me think a lot about Link to the Past, and how I don't like the sword swing in Link to the Past, because Soul Blazer feels like it has a much wider arc on the sword swing and it's more satisfying in certain ways. And you know, I imagine if there was grass to cut in this game, I would be able to do that without, you know, missing it for some stupid reason like Link to the Past does. And has made me think about, like, doing a video on Link to the Past short sword swing and why it annoys me. I'm just thinking of these, like, weird video ideas. I need to commit to actually making videos more these days, Bally. But it's, you know, the struggle is real. Too many things happening, too much stuff. But I will get there at some point. But the structure of this game is really curious because similar, I would say, to ActRaiser, there are two modes here of you are building up settlements while also going out and killing enemies and adventuring, but there's less kind of management aspect to it. It's more so you go to these places, so you go to these kind of dungeon areas, and the way it works is that enemies will spawn from these little kind of squares. So there are squares littered, they're called monster lairs. So they're basically little squares that will just pop out enemies, and they will just pop out like 10 of them, and you kill all 10, and then it like gives a little pop and it disappears, and you have to step on the center, there's like a green button on it, you step on the green button, and sometimes it will open up a new route where you are, and then sometimes it will warp you back. It won't actually warp you back, but it will show you the village area, and it will say, you have saved this lady, and now her house just appears in the village, because you start off and it's just this blank space. There's nothing in it. It's grass. It's nothing. Mm. And then as you go through these dungeons, you kill these enemies, you free these souls. I guess that's why it's called Soul Blazer, because you're freeing the souls of these people who've been locked away by the evil bad guy. And you will start to populate this town, essentially, by your adventuring, by going through these dungeon spaces. And from an action perspective, it's very simple. You basically have this one sword, and then you can equip swords, you can equip armor, which, you know, obviously mitigates how much damage you take. And then you have a magic spell, and the magic spell can be like a fireball. It's one of them is an ice thing, which shoots out in four directions. And so you collect these as you go along. But, you know, in terms of that stuff, kind of minimal. You do level up and you do get experience, but it is quite light in terms of the RPG stuff. So it's not super complicated. And it is very much like a similar thing as you go through. But I think the thing that makes it interesting to me is just the weirdness of it. Like, lots of strange characters and creatures, and the writing feels very early Super Nintendo in terms of the localization and trying to figure out what anyone's even saying. There's this kind of loose plot of this guy called Dr. Leo, who has, you know, he was in this village to begin with, but then you kind of follow his trail and you're trying to figure out what happened to him, and you go to his laboratory at some point, and yeah, there is an overarching narrative, but I wouldn't say it's super comprehensible. Like, it is very much like there are demons and evil things in the world, you got to kill them and take them out. But like the second area you go to, so the first area is just like a human village and you populate it with humans. For some reason there are dogs that can talk, and you talk to the dogs, and sometimes they give you stuff, and that's weird. But then the next village you get to is a village of just talking animals, so they're all animals and they all talk. And you open up different areas in the village by freeing like a crocodile, for example, who lets you walk across him, and then you can get to another place. And a lot of it has a little bit of kind of point and click adventure aspects, where sometimes you won't be able to progress in a dungeon until you go back to the village and talk to all the NPCs that you unlocked, and you have to figure out, oh, I need to get this item from this NPC so that when I go to the volcano area, I have the ability to turn the lava into stone so I can walk past it and not get damaged. So that type of thing, where you're constantly going back and forth between the village area and the kind of dungeon exploration space. And yeah, there's a lot of variety in terms of places you go. There's a whole underwater city with mermaids. You're freeing the mermaids. The lab that I am in at the moment, I just finished actually Dr. Leo's lab, has some bizarre, like, there are plants. You just talk to the plants, man. It's like you free a plant and then you just have a chat with it, and then the plant tells you a tip. The plant's like, by the way, did you know you can talk to the doors? The doors will talk to you, and you've just been walking through the doors this whole time. And then I turn to the door and suddenly the door's talking to me and it gives me a thing, and I'm like, oh shit, I needed this to progress. Thanks, plant, for telling me to talk to the door. Then I talk to the cupboard, and this is what the cupboard says. The cupboard says that he needed some exercise because he's been sitting around for too long. And so you click on this cupboard, and then after he says that line, the cupboard just starts jumping up and down like it's doing jumping jacks. And I'm like, what the fuck is this game, man? This is so bizarre. Like, it really is out there in terms of, the kind of almost surreal fantasy vibes that it has. Just super weird stuff, and I find it really fascinating from a gameplay perspective. To be honest with you, it is relatively repetitive because you're just going through these different areas, and different enemies will pop up, and it's about managing your health versus, you know, how many enemies are spawning and managing, you know, the enemy patterns and learning them and that sort of thing. But it's satisfying. It really is a like podcast game of play it while I'm listening to something, but like seeing different spaces. There was also, like, in this lab area, there's a model town, so you free the model town, and now that's in your base, and you go and click on the model town, and it just says, the model town swallowed you, and all of a sudden, you're in the model town fighting these little tiny soldiers. And I'm like, what? This game is bizarre, man. It's just so, it's so crazy, and I'm really glad that I started playing it, because I think a lot of people don't think Soul Blazer is, like, the one that you should really care about from these trilogy of games. Like Illusion of Gaia and Terranigma, people think are like, those are the actual classics, right? Those are the games you should really play. Soul Blazer is the one that kind of started it and was like, well, this is like our start point, and like has like much, you can see much more the influence of ActRaiser on Soul Blazer than I think you can in the other two games. Of course, I haven't got to those yet, but from what I know and from what I've watched of YouTube videos and stuff like that, it seems like that seems to be the case. But as the Odd Duckling, as the kind of weird starting child to this trilogy, I really like Soul Blazer so far, and I'm very close to finishing it. I'm kind of in the last section.
Game?
And yeah, it's around 10-ish hours, 10 to 12, I would say, probably. And that's probably, you know, how long it'll take me. But I think all three of these games are nice in terms of their length. Like, they are between that 10 and 20-hour mark. They're not super long RPGs. They really, it's not like today, you know. It's certainly no Assassin's Creed Odyssey, where everything is bloated to hell and there's like an infinite map. And, you know, much as I love that game, boy, it's long, and it takes a lot of time. So, yeah, really, really enjoying playing through Soul Blazer. And I'll maybe talk about finishing it next time if I do, and then I'll move on to Illusion of Gaia, and we'll see how it goes. So I'm excited.
Sweet.
Excited to dig into some weird niche video games on the Super Nintendo. So it feels to me like a console that I will really plumb the depths of in the next few years. Like, I'm looking at the Switch Online service, and obviously I've got to do all my caveman games and play through those. But just give me more deep cuts.
You're gonna become a Super Nintendo expert.
I hope. Yeah, I not an expert necessarily, but like, I want to play that weird firefighter game, you know, on Switch Online, which is super bizarre, and like these types of experiences that just don't get made anymore, or at least if they do get made, they're made by tiny studios and they're not like big like releases like they used to be in different ways. So yeah, good stuff. I'm excited, and I'm sure we'll talk about more of that in the future. For now, Bally, we're going to take a break, and we will come back to chat with you all about some of the emails that you have sent into the show, and break them down. So we'll see you in a bit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second segment of today's show. It is time for emails. We keep putting out that call and you keep delivering, but we're going to keep doing it because we are still getting low. So if you would like to send an email to This Nintendo Life, please email thisnintendolife@gmail.com. That is thisnintendolife@gmail.com. Or you can leave a comment in our Discord server. That would also be hugely appreciated. Link to that in the description. Our first email this week is from Matriya, who's from the UK, and says, "Hey guys, listening to the show and heard you needed questions. So here's a fairly simple one. What is a game that you played and really liked at first, but then your opinion dulled on it as time went on? And vice versa, what is a game you played and your opinion of it increased after a period of time? Many thanks, Matriya."
Thanks for the question, Matriya. I feel like we make these known often in certain ways, of like when we do our top 50 list and we're like, well, yeah, I think for you, Bally, a lot of games that I'm trying to be like, but think back to when you played that, remember, and then you're like, well, yeah, over time I've just kind of changed my opinion, yeah, and yeah, it's not as hot anymore. So do you want to give me yours, Bally, and you don't think have aged as well as when you first played them?
Yeah, these came up with our top 50, but stuff like the Trine games, I think they are good games, but I just think I was very hot at first, and then going back to Trine 1 just like made me very sour and like...
No, but see, I need to contend this fucking opinion, right? Because Trine 1 is just not a very good game. I also went back to Trine 1, and I just don't think it's a very good game compared to Trine 2, which is just significantly better, like by leaps and bounds. I actually recently bought Trine 4 in the Steam sale and have intentions to play that soon, and I'm looking forward to it, because let me tell you, Trine 2, still a fantastic game. So my contention with that is, sure, you may not like Trine as much, but Trine 1 is not a good video game, so
yeah. I don't like Trine 2 as much either, but yeah, I did like it a lot when I played it. I think games like, a lot of games in series get really usurped that I really enjoyed at the time. A game like Mario Kart Wii, for example, like at the time it was like, this is awesome, I love the online, I love all these modes. I was in like a daily challenge or like a weekly challenge mode I was obsessed with for a while, and now I'm just like, yeah, Mario Kart Wii is so much better. Like, they've just improved everything, and I would not want to go back to Mario Kart Wii in the slightest, complete with its motion controls and all that horribleness. I've cooled a lot on Xenoblade Chronicles. The more like I look back at my time with that game, I really enjoyed the start. I obviously had a huge issue with the final boss, but then I was just like, just mechanically, that game just falls very flat for my personal tastes and learning curves and JRPGs. And yes, the story was great and fantastic, but it was nowhere near like good enough for me to pull that game up to a degree where I have like a lot more praise for that game. And I just, there's so many other JRPGs that just have a better balance of mechanics, or they at least teach you mechanics better.
Yeah, I see. I find that interesting because like the I think part of it is also playing it on new 3DS, you don't get the same grandeur of the world.
No, I didn't mind the grandeur is better on Wii, but my biggest issue with that game is the mechanics, and like that's not going to change between Wii and 3DS. And like, I yeah, do think that just because the world didn't look, I mean, I still got the world in 3D, which did look really cool. Like, it is a good looking new 3DS game. Mm-hmm. I mean, I agree it doesn't look as good as the Wii one, but I swear it's nothing to do with like the look of the game that kind of soured me on it. Not to mention like the fact it was on 3DS meant I could actually beat the game, because I played it like really straight for like 2-3 months. I think I beat the game like 2.5 months, 3 months, I can't remember, mm-hmm, but quite a small period of time for like an 80-hour game. And I would have struggled to even pick up the game again had it been on Wii rather than 3DS.
Well, it took me a while, right? It took me like 3 years to finish the game in the first place. So I get, you could say like Xenoblade is like the opposite of that for me. It's not really the same question, but I guess, you know, it's definitely a game that the more I played it, the more I fell in love with it. And is definitely extremely high. It's just like the exploration of those, just the world, right? Like just the idea of being on the back of these titans for me is just like, even though I had issues with the combat first time around, when I revisited it for the definitive edition, I was like, oh, I understand this completely. This makes so much more sense.
Did they edit any of those things to make them more simple, or did you already?
No, I don't think so. I think part of it was I had a base understanding, and then I kind of watched some stuff to make sure I knew, and then like got much more into the systems. But then also that game has an easy mode on the definitive edition. So for the last section of bosses, I didn't need to grind because I was like, oh, I've basically played this entire thing on regular. And then I'm like, I've already beat this. I just want to play through the end again. So I just switched it to easy for the last few bosses and just finished the game.
I mean, the last thing you ever want to do in a JRPG is grind. So like every game should have the feature to just turn it down and reach that final boss, because you just want to see those end credits. You want the story to play out and move on with your life. And I did not have that experience with Xenoblade, and it really soured it in my mind.
I think, well, also you have like banging your head against the wall syndrome, which is like, I think you went into that
good for action games, bad for JRPGs. Because...
yeah, you went into that fight, I think, underleveled in the first place and didn't go back and like grind. You're like, I'm just going to fight this boss 25 times in a row, you know? Like,
Right.
Which, you know, in some ways can harm you. In some ways, you beat Ridley with like 3 energy tanks and like, you're a lunatic.
I did.
So yeah.
I've obviously like gone south on a game like Box Boy. I think I've said a lot about that on the show before. I've really lost my mojo with like Apex Legends, you know, games like that. I struggle to like, if I'm going to go get involved in an online game again, I want to play some Overwatch. You know, I'm not feeling Apex Legends at all in the same way. I just way prefer Overwatch's style and everything. So yeah, those are some of mine.
Damn, dude, you just drop them like they're nothing.
Drop them.
In terms of ones that have cooled on, I think a game like Smash Brawl is a good example of a game where we played so much of that at the time and were in love with it, and just, you know, it was the current Smash Brothers game. But like going back to Brawl, I think, is really hard when you think about the speed of current Smash Brothers. And obviously it's not like Melee in that sense, but I don't think we noticed the difference necessarily when we were younger, jumping from Melee to Brawl.
No.
But these days, I think I really would, and I would feel a lot more strongly. And so that game is great, and I had a great time playing it at the time, but I don't think it's a game that I would enjoy as much playing today, because there's just better alternatives available. I think our experience of playing Nintendogs plus Cats has soured me on Nintendogs the original in a way that makes me sad.
Very good one. Yeah, totally agree.
And I'm sure, like, I would enjoy going back to Nintendogs the original, but, like, thinking about it, the core loop is kind of the same, and it is kind of bare bones. It was the type of game that we played when we were younger and enjoyed on a different kind of level than we enjoy games these days. You know, it was just you play it every day, you just do your little tasks, and you get your medals, and you try and get to the top of the tournament. And
the DS was really good at those games, like Animal Crossing and this, and Brain Training, where it's all about checking in, playing for 20 minutes, and then doing something else, or, you know, like, it's just...
And that's kind of like, when we were younger, that's more of what we did. We just played the same games.
Yeah, I treated sports games like that, like Mario Kart, like that. That's you just dip in, play a bit, and then go and do something else. I'd never play a game start to finish, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, Nintendogs, great, but not that great, really, when it comes down to it. And then The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess, a game that I always like meme-worthy because I continue to do a Let's Play that is never going to end. But like looking at it now, when I first played Twilight Princess, I was like, this is the best Zelda game ever. Of course, it was the only Zelda game I'd ever owned and actually played myself. But I think that having played the entire series at this point, there are great things about Twilight Princess. Like, its dungeons are really good and stuff like that. But I think just as a person, I prefer light stuff to dark stuff, and so tonally the game is just a bit too grimdark, and like the Twilight Realm is just weird, and I don't know, a lot of that stuff doesn't work, and it doesn't hold up graphically in the same way that other games in the Zelda series do, because it was the one that was like, let's do realism, and guess what?
Give the fans what they want.
Right, but like, look at the HD versions of Wind Waker, Twilight Princess, and Skyward Sword, and Twilight Princess looks so bad in comparison to those other two games, because the other two games have like defined art styles that are timeless, and Twilight Princess just doesn't. It just looks bad, and that sucks, because I think at the time it was a... like, oh, this is epic and grand, and like Lord of the Rings and all that stuff, but it just doesn't carry the same weight with me anymore. So I'm not as into Twilight Princess. So those are a few of mine. Cool. Should we do the opposite Bally games, which you have decided are better after having played them.
I am a sucker for games with strong endings, like either narratively or even like an action beat. Like, I'm a real sucker for like, wow, that game just finished on such a high note. I love that game, you know, like that kind of feeling. I probably have a slow start with almost every JRPG I play. I think, I'm not so sure, or I always get to like a point where I'm like, this game is very long, I'm getting very tired now of this, but then it picks up at the end or something, and then, so I don't know, like, honestly, most games that I love, I probably wasn't as hot on in the first few hours. Like, that sounds really vague in general, but I mean it, like, even, like, stuff like Stardew Valley, like, it reached a rhythm I found once I was a good few days, even like maybe a whole season in, and I was like, damn, I'm now feeling this, like, this is a fantastic, phenomenal game. But at the start I was like, yeah, it's just Harvest Moon, isn't it? And it kind of like, it's just such a false thing, because I don't think it reveals itself for like its real mechanics and just how well it all synergizes.
That sounds to me like the first time I listened to any album, right? And I don't do that as much these days, but back in the day I would listen to like the new Alter Bridge album. I would be like, that wasn't very good. And then I listen to it again, I'm like, there's some songs here. And then you listen to it again and again, and eventually you're like, this fucking rules. But like, the first time I listened to any album that I love, you know, and there are so many albums that I just adore, you know, like the first Panic of the Disco album, I think first time I listened through that, I was like, I don't know, it's fine. You know, like that, and then like, it takes repetition, it takes like familiarity for me to fall in love with something like that. So I guess that sounds like how you are with the start of every single video game you play. Yeah.
And so many games are designed where it is tutorialized, and then there's like a story beat or an emotional beat when the world opens up. You know, like in Zelda, famously Wind Waker, it's when you get the boat and you're sailing on King of Red Lions, you're like, you've learned all the mechanics, now the world is open and you are sailing, and it, like, this feels incredible. And almost every Zelda game has a feeling like that at some point, like getting to Hyrule Fields, like the build up and the first few hours, I think, of so many games arguably are super weak, especially longer games, because they just need to lay down the groundwork of this is how the game works. And while those are important and I appreciate them, they're nowhere near as fun often as that first beat.
That makes sense. Do you have examples then of games that after you have finished them, you think back on them and they are more positive in your mind, having been removed from them for a period of time?
Definitely stuff like Mario Odyssey just keeps going up in my mind. Tropical Freeze keeps going up in my mind. Pikmin 3, where they felt innovative and great at the time, but then I look back and it's also because those games haven't had like sequels, you know, there's no like new Pikmin that's even better, or Donkey Kong platformer that's better, and we've not had another 3D Mario since, you know, so it's just like, that is the best experience of that type of game in my mind, and as a result it just kind of keeps growing, you know, until I have something where I say, right, this game has completely displaced that other game. A little bit like the way Breath of the Wild has done that to Wind Waker in many ways, where those games are doing some similar things, but, you know, they are still different games, but it's still, Breath of the Wild just feels like my go-to. That is obviously my favorite Zelda by a very, very long way. And it's going to be difficult to change that.
Yeah, so I think you've hit on something that potentially like runs into mine as well, which is also like the game as a continued conversation that keeps being brought up by people, right? One of the cool things about Breath of the Wild is that it always has like new people on Twitter being like, look at this crazy shit I still did in this game, years removed from the fact. And so it keeps it in top of mind. The other through line for me for the games that I am more fond of having finished them is music, is soundtrack. Like if I go back to a game soundtrack and keep listening to it, like that almost is this connection back to it that's really strong. And so my list I put together was, it's similar in a lot of different ways because there's also like a kind of Japanese game through line here with these, but Nier Automata, Danganronpa V3, Persona 5 are like my three where I was like, yeah, these games at the time I really liked them, enjoyed them, but I think Nier Automata is probably the best example of a game that I kind of didn't really like playing that much. But after having played it and like ingesting more media and listen, that soundtrack is fucking phenomenal. Like, I just have a clear respect for that game that kind of goes above necessarily when I played it. And I guess a twist with Persona 5 is Persona 5 came out in a year of death, right, where every good video game ever came out in 2017. And I think because I have this very personal, emotional, strong connection to Persona 4, I was always expecting Persona 5 to, like, do things that Persona 4 did, and then it never ended up doing the things I wanted it to in that sense. But when I listen to the soundtrack, and when I think about my time playing that game, I'm like, wow, that game was a phenomenal experience. Just, like, adored it. Like, I just gorged myself on Persona 5. Just, like, lived in that world for hours upon hours. And yeah, I think so much more positively and fondly about it as a result of, you know, continuing to think about, like, the stuff that happens and like the wider message of that game and the way the music works with it. And then Undertale is also another one, which is very similar of like, I thought Undertale was good fun. I really enjoyed it. I think it has really interesting mechanics and stuff like that, but the soundtrack is so, so strong. And then like having watched other people do the different endings on YouTube afterwards and just getting a greater respect for the work outside of my own experience with it. It tends to be the case with games like that. Danganronpa V3 is a little different. I think the soundtrack for the Danganronpa games is fantastic, but it's one of those games where I finished it and my mind was blown. But I think the fact that I still sit there sometimes and just stare into space and think about how bold the ending of that game is and the wildness of how it comes together, and I'm like, I will never make a piece of media that like does what this does. It is just like on another level with the shit that it pulls. So yeah, those for me are experiences where I think having been removed from them, they still stay top of my mind, mainly because of music. Music for me is just such a strong way of connecting me back to a game and just you know, reminding me of why I love it so much. So
I'll also say, doing our top 50 games of all time lists like we just did also reminds me, oh yeah, that game's really, really great. And just by being high up the list and having a good discussion about it will make it a more positive thought in my head for a lot of games as well. Like, yeah. And that's a very...
Because we have short memories, man, you know? Yeah, like that's yeah. It's why it's hard for like Game of the Year time when something comes out at the beginning that you played in January and you're like... It's like why I had to replay Ori and the Will of the Wisp before last year, because I'm like... Yeah, it was fantastic, wasn't it? And then I played it and I was like, no, this is the best game. It's definitely a tricky thing for sure.
Right. Our next email is from Justin, who's from Pennsylvania, and says, greetings, sirs. Here's a really stupid, pointless question prompt to have fun with. You've both taken on the identity of Cupid, and it's St. Valentine's Day. Your mission is to pair video game characters who would form a great couple. Hell, it doesn't even have to be a great couple, just an entertaining one. Don't be shy about it. Feel free to cross franchises, ignore genders and species types. Maybe even think of a pair that would spawn an interesting new character if they procreated. The only rule is you can't be obvious. Mario and Peach or Luigi and Daisy are too vanilla of an answer. Here's my answer. Travis Touchdown and Bayonetta, badassery at its maximum.
It's a good pairing. I am very on board with that. It works for like genre as well, because they're both like action game characters and they both have similar like, you know, energy about them, which just works. And I think that's a good pick. I do like that one. Bally, do you have some fun picks?
Yeah.
Most of mine are just off the wall ones that are goofy.
Yeah, a lot of mine are video game local, but a little bit off the wall. I don't know.
Okay.
If we can get there, but yeah, everyone thinks Peach is with Mario when secretly the whole time she's been with Toadsworth. Like, I think
Toadsworth.
I think that's just common knowledge. So
of course, yeah,
not really a spoiler.
Yeah,
I think every single cart pairing and Double Dash, they're at it. They're doing it. They're, you know,
anyone you put together in
apart from the ones who are related, I should say. That's the
okay.
Caveat.
Yes. Yeah, yeah,
remember,
yeah.
You know, like Birdo and Yoshi, Mario and Luigi, Peach and Daisy. That's the one. There we go. They're together.
Yeah, of course.
Samus and Adam Malkovich. I think that's a very obvious one. I think that's well known.
Isn't that like in the game in some senses, I guess?
I mean, you've played Other M, not me, isn't he in that game?
Yeah. No, see, I don't know. If it was, it would be kind of fucked up, I think. You know, like, there's like a power thing going on there, you know, like a work relationship as well. It's just like there's a power dynamic at play that I'm not sure I'm down with. It's almost like a father-daughter thing as well, almost. So I don't know that I like that one personally. Okay.
But I mean, when she's not with Adam, she's probably with Ridley, you know,
flying yeah, around Samus the galaxy. And Ridley, that's
you not, know. Yeah. I think all the WarioWare characters are probably in one relationship altogether. Like, they're just in one, they're one unit. You know, okay. They're inseparable. They're just one thing.
See, I would think, like, Ashley would be like having a what do you call it relationship where you have polyamorous. Ashley would have a polyamorous relationship with the chorus boys from Rhythm Heaven. That's what I'm thinking, you know, like crossing Rhythm Heaven and WarioWare. That's kind of you know, the crossover that makes the most sense in terms of like the wackiness of characters from both those worlds. Like the frogs from Spin It Boys, you know, they got to be hooking up from someone from WarioWare, you know. Yeah. Love those
exactly
frogs.
Exactly. Yeah. I was gonna say, I quite like the idea of just like heroes with villains, you know. I just like that idea.
Oh, okay.
So I was going to say like the King of Red Lions and Ganondorf, you know.
Just, how would that work?
I mean, it depends if he's in boat mode or king mode, you know.
Oh, just, oh boy. You know? Yeah, king. I mean, king mode and Ganondorf, actually, that's a pretty good pair, you know.
I mean, he just says boat mode for like Friday nights, you know. That's like Ganondorf's
exactly
taste, right? So
that's know how you get Ganondorf back from the bar, you know, just like in the King of Red Lions. How it works.
You're not getting your boat mode tonight.
No, absolutely not.
I've just got others, like, you know, rather than Link and Zelda, you know, like I think Medley is where Link's heart has always been, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah, Zelda is just really boring and he wants to be with Medley.
See, one of mine from when I was younger, from like when I was a child, like I was like so sad when Link, I was at my friend's house, they were playing Ocarina of Time for the first time, and you know, Saria like is so sad when he leaves the forest, and I was like, no, Saria's, Link and Saria, they should be together. That's that's kind of like how I felt as a young kid. But yes, Medley also similar.
Isn't Saria like a child?
Well, they're both kids. Come on, man. They're both like 10 or whatever. Yeah. They're all like, I guess all the children of the forest are kind of permanent children, right? So Link eventually grows up and becomes older. But yeah,
right. You got any other?
I got loads, man. I got loads of pairings. These are like from different franchises, though, similar to what the question was talking about. So my first one is Geralt of Rivia and Bowser. Now here's the one with this. Geralt, he understands monsters. He sees their humanity, right? Like, he is not someone who will just go there and kill the monster. He'll go there and have a chat with the monster, and they will talk it out. They will figure out what the hell happened.
Is that actually happens in the game, in the canon?
Oh, yeah. No, totally. There are full missions where you go to, someone tells you to slay a monster, and you end up just, like, having tea with them, basically. Or the equivalent of just like you're having a chat with this monster and really figuring out who they are, where they came from. There's a real humanity that he's able to find in the monsters that he deals with. And so, like, Bowser feels like a misunderstood monster, right? I think Geralt and Bowser, they could work things out. It feels like a pair that works for me. I like it. If you want two badass women together who have experience of like deadly worlds where people and things are trying to kill them all the time, Cassandra from Assassin's Creed Odyssey and Aloy from Horizon Zero Dawn. Now that to me is a power couple, you know. Yeah. They both got bows, they both got skills, survival. Sorry?
My open world is bigger than yours.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, you got the skills, the boat skills. Oh, it just, they feel like they could take on the world together, and they pair well together. So Aloy and Cassandra. I kind of took some character traits here. So Luigi, shy, scared, like wants to like run away from everything. Also Bernadetta from Fire Emblem Three Houses just always lives in her room, never comes out, stays in there the whole time. So Luigi and Bernadetta, I think they share like similar character traits in a way that they would work well together. You know, they'd just sit inside and play video games. You know, that's kind of the vibe I'm looking for from those two. I think this one is like a fan art thing from the time because of the release dates of the game, but Isabelle from Animal Crossing and Doom guy, like there's so much fan art of those two on the internet now, but I think that would be a fun pair up, you know, of like this gruff dude, you know. You can just imagine Doom guy and Isabelle just like, you know, making him calmer, making him like a more chilled out guy. And then Impa and Kiryu Kazuma. I think both of them have like similar energy in terms of their dedication, but also their like kindness and their the way they care for different people.
Which Impa are we talking about?
I think Skyward Sword Impa. You know, the way that she looks after Zelda, the way that she's like, she always knows what's going on, and she has like a self-seriousness to her, but also like a kind of kindness and an understanding. I think Impa kind of is that across the series in a lot of ways, but that's the one that comes to mind when I think of Impa. And Kiryu also has a similar kind of vibe going on. You know, they both like look after younger girls. You know, like Haruka is like basically Kiryu's adopted daughter, and Zelda with Impa is very much like a similar thing. They're like preparing these kids for the world, you know, and I think they would understand each other the most. That's one of my favorite pairings I came up with, Impa and Kiryu. I think that's a really good one. So yeah, nice. those are some of my picks. Thanks for the question. That was a fun one to think about and go through and be like, how would I pair these together? So
yes, apologies for my lack of creativity. I'm just really bad at creativity on the spot.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's how it goes.
But like I said at the top of the segment, we need some more emails. So please send them to thisnintendolife@gmail.com. That is thisnintendolife@gmail.com. We would really appreciate it. We're actually recording like ahead of time, but by the time we record next time, it'd be great to have loads of emails. So please send them in or post a comment in our Discord server. Join the community. It's a great little group we've got going on over there. But I think that wraps up this segment, MBZ.
It does. That's the end. That's the show. We gone get out of here and do some other stuff. So let's talk about the stuff that we do and you can find on the internet. We're, of course, on Twitter at TNL Podcast. That's it, at TNL Podcast. You can find the Twitter there where we talk about stuff we do, all the shows going out, Patreon episodes, blah, blah, blah. Go check us out there. You can find me at Lord NBZ. Bally, where can they find you?
I'm on Twitter at Ballyman91. That's BallyMan91.
Lovely stuff. You can obviously find the show in various places. We're on Spotify, we're on Stitcher, we're on Apple Podcasts, we're on any podcasting app that you have, or you can download things and look them up and search for them. So subscribe on there, give us a review, all that good stuff helps a tremendous amount. Check us out on those platforms. Bally, we also have some people to thank because they supported us on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/thisnintendolife, you get bonus episodes where we talk about other video games. You get bonus bits where we talk about other random shit. And of course, there are some people who support us to the point where we would love to give them a direct shout out on the show. Bally, who are those fine folks?
Yes, thank you to our $10 tier patrons. They are Zach S, Atari Alex, Thomas, Matthew, and I think this is for the last time.
Well, no, here's the wrinkle, Bally. This show goes up after the wedding, even though at the time of recording it has not yet happened.
So time of recording, assuming everything goes to plan, it will be my wife, but for now it's my fiance, Caroline.
All right, we'll wait till next episode for the big changeover.
We'll do a news update.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, I think that's pretty much it. Obviously you can check out us on other places on the internet. We're on YouTube, and we're also on Discord. Links to those are also in the description, so check us out there if you prefer to have it on in a tab in the background, or if you want to join our community where we talk about stuff and chat with people about Nintendo and other things. Do check that stuff out. But yeah, that's going to close things out. Bally, we're going to go to the lakes and get drunk and stuff before we get married. How are you looking forward to it?
Lake District this weekend. That will be good. That will be good. You're driving all the way up from London. I'm coming down from Edinburgh.
Yep.
It's going to be a jolly old time.
It'll be fun. We look forward to that happening. And we will look forward to talking to you next time on the show in a couple of weeks. But until then, thank you everybody for listening. We will see you very soon. Bye-bye, folks. The musical interlude used on today's show was Builder's Journey from Lego Builder's Journey, copyright Lego 2020.